What's low in fat, low in cholesterol, and good for your health? That's right, it's Historical Hystericals. Hi everybody, and welcome to another episode of Historical Hystericals. I'm Chris Brennan.
And I'm Commander Mike.
Ah, it's good to be back.
It is, and we're getting very excited about today's show. It's one of the greats in comedy, Jerry Lewis.
Oh, I thought you were talking about me for a second.
Excuse me, I'll stand back and let the ego in.
Just open the door a bit wider and let my head through the door.
Just a bit of contact information to start with. You can check us out. Our website is commandermike356.podomatic.com. You can email us at commandermike356@yahoo.com.au. Or you can just look us up and keep in touch on Facebook. Look up Historical Hystericals.
And you'll find us just sitting there waving back at you.
Yes. So as we said, today's subject is Jerry Lewis, who's made some of the funniest films that we can remember. It goes back to At War with the Army, Sailor Beware, Partners, Geisha Boy, The Nutty Professor, Disorderly Orderly, King of Comedy, and it was a great show. And we'll get through all those and talk about the history of Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. Oh, he's done so many movies. How many movies do you think he would have done in total?
I wish I'd had that question earlier. I would have done the numbers. I've got the printout of all his films, but I haven't got a number next to them. Mungle?
Caught out.
Terrible.
And, of course, as well as doing all movies, he's done TV shows and a lot of variety performances. And the guy is never-ending when it comes to raising money for charity. He's at it all the time. He even donates his dirty sweat socks to charity.
Which is scary on so many levels.
It is. He changes his sweat socks, white sweat socks, several times a day, and every pair that he takes off, he gives to charity. Now, he either does a lot for charity or he really hates charity, one or the other.
Yes.
The guy's got a big heart. You've got to give him that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've got a number for you.
You have?
72 movies.
Wow, 72 movies. That's pretty prolific, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how old's Jerry now?
82
and 84. 84, right. So nearly a movie a year.
That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, from the time he started working when he was, 5 years old, I think it was?
5 years old. He started on with his father on the Borscht circuit in New York, singing Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Now, his father, Danny Lewis, was a professional entertainer. And his mother played piano for the for a New York City radio station. So Jerry was born into this theatrical family, so that's all he really wanted to do. So, as I say, at five, made his debut. And then by the time he was 15, he created a comic act miming and silently mouthing the lyrics to popular songs of the time. The Milli Vanilli of the era.
Although he didn't actually get disgraced as Milli Vanilli did, but
no,
there you go.
He did it on purpose, and he mugged and gave very funny performances. He sort of dressed up as a caricature of Carmen Miranda with a salad bowl on his head and do the record act, as he referred to it.
So people actually knew he was miming. So.
Yes. Oh, yes. It made it very clear. Actually, if here's a YouTube commercial very early in the piece. If you look up Jerry Lewis typewriter, you'll see an act along the same lines that he's done in several movies and live performances. And he's miming to a pre-recorded soundtrack. It's brilliant.
Now, when you're watching Jerry Lewis the typewriter, right at the end, tell me where the bit of paper came from.
Yeah. Oh, that's the one from the movie. There's about four different versions of that one act that he's done. There's one that he did in the movie, and there's a couple he did on live shows and variety shows, and it's really interesting to see him do it at different times in his life. I love YouTube.
Very early in Jerry's career, he braved the offices of booking agents and just kept on hammering on their doors, and finally he got bookings at a burlesque house in Buffalo. This was with his record act where he was miming the stuff off stage. It's hardly a big break, but it was something. And he was a bit discouraged by it, almost ready to give up. And a veteran burlesque comedian, Max Coleman, came along. And now Max had worked with Jerry's father many years before. And Max came along and said, "No, look, Jerry, you've got something here. We've got to keep at it." And he got him to try out with the Mimac at Brown's Hotel in New York. The audience absolutely loved it. And they were so enthusiastic that Irving Kay, a circuit comedian, helped young Jerry get further bookings. Now, Kay, Irving and Jerry are still very, very good friends to this day. So a lasting friendship that's gone all through the years.
Yes, and it was a big hit. It gave him the encouragement to go on. Eventually, he crossed paths with a young Italian singer by the name of Dean Martin.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. He was basically a crooner. He just got up there and sang. He looked good. He was an idol of the day.
Eye candy, you know.
Yeah, basically that's what it was. Hmm. Now, Jerry was performing at the 500 Club in Atlantic City, and one of the other entertainers quit suddenly. So Jerry had to work with Martin. They first worked separately, and then they ad-libbed together, improvising insults and jokes and squirting seltzer bottles and hurtling bunches of celery and basically madness. In less than 18 weeks, their salaries rose from $250 a week to $5,000 a week. That was in 1946.
$250 a week in 1946 was pretty good, I would have thought.
Yeah. All of a sudden, they became the place to go. You know, everyone would say, "We're going out to see a show. We'll go see this Martin and Lewis thing." The partnership with Dean is very unusual for the time, the traditional comic and straight man roles like Abbott and Costello. That was very, very defined. One guy was straight and the other guy got all the jokes. Martin and Lewis were very different because they both got the laughs. Jerry would run around with this mad, zany character and Dean's the super smooth guy. But Dean was getting some jokes in there as well. It was a very interesting partnership, as very unusual for the time.
Now, a lot of their first stage acts, too, were a lot of improv. It was just, as it happened, it was done. You know, Jerry had just come up with something on the spot and bang, they'd run with it. It was just total madness.
Yeah. Now, one of the great things, if you look back at the Colgate Comedy Hour, you can get DVDs of this show being remastered. Look at some of the stuff there and you just see the creativity and the fun they had doing it. The there's one episode I was watching a couple of weeks ago where they were running long for time, so they had to stretch. So you can see Jerry says, "What? We've got 2 minutes to fill." Okay. And the madness that came out was obviously stuff they've maybe done in nightclubs or anything, but ask any performer to do 2 minutes now. Who can?
Oh, dear. The good old days.
So, yeah, they're unpredictable, zany, and a huge hit. So, of course, then they went on to the radio and television, like the Colgate Comedy Hour, and then eventually the movies. Now, the radio stuff was very interesting because Jerry's voice was distinctive, to say the least. They did a radio show, Dean and Jerry, where they were struggling entertainers, and you're sort of listening in on their private lives. It's, you know, some of the old radio stuff, if you can get your hands on that, that's really fun to listen to.
YouTube?
Probably not YouTube for the radio stuff, but certainly YouTube will have some of the Colgate Comedy Hour stuff.
Jerry and Dean, as we know them so well, they were working at the Coco Cabana in New York, and producer Hal Lewis watched the two perform. Now, Hal Lewis was working with Paramount Pictures at the time, and he saw them and went, "Okay, these guys have got to be in movies." So he offered them a contract with Paramount to come along and do some movies. Their first film was My Friend Irma in 1949. Bosley Crowther of the New York Times wrote, "We could go along with the laughs which were fetched by a new mad comedian, Jerry Lewis by name, this freakishly built and acting young man who has been seen in nightclubs hereabouts with a collar ad partner, Dean Martin, has a genuine comic quality. The swift eccentricity of his movements, the harrowing features of his face, and the squeak of his vocal protestations have flair. His idiocracy constitutes the burlesque of an idiot, which is something else again. He's the funniest thing in the picture. Why couldn't he just finish with that last bit?
Well, the interesting thing was Dean and Jerry were very much a very small part of the film. They weren't featured, of course. They're newcomers. So they had very small parts in the film and were what everyone was talking about, very similar to Abbott and Costello with their first film. They had a small part and everyone pounced on them as being fantastic, and the rest of the film was pretty much forgotten.
It's funny how things like that happen. You'll get someone in a movie who is just the absolute standout performer, and the storyline's forgotten, the production quality's all forgotten. All everybody talks about is that comic duo or that one actor, or, you know, it's a bit like Heath Ledger in Batman. The Joker, whilst being a large character in the movie, Heath just absolutely blew everybody away with that performance. And most people forgot about the rest of the storyline and everything. They were just focused on what he was doing, and it was just brilliant. And the same goes with Martin and Lewis in their first movie.
Mm. And, of course, you've got to remember, too, that they've had years of getting together. Well, it was 1946 when they became a partnership before the 1949 film. But before that, Jerry had been working for years on his own. Dean had been working on his own. So they knew the business. They knew how to entertain. Mm. And just given the break to showcase all that, and it all comes together.
The team of Martin and Lewis became box office dynamite, becoming the world's top box office earners from 1950 through to 1956. They made some of the most lasting movies during this time, including At War with the Army, Sailor Beware, That's My Boy, Jumping Jacks, The Stooge, Scared Stiff, The Caddy. This list just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, Money from Home, Living It Up, Three Ring Circus, You're Never Too Young, Artists and Models, Partners, and their last film, Hollywood or Bust. And all those films are just the Martin and Lewis films.
Yeah, there were so many more that, I mean, Jerry went off and did movies on his own. And
not yet.
Films.
Not yet.
Later on they did.
Just in that 10-year period, all those films is a hell of a turnout. Now, in addition to their film careers, they both kept busy with the radio program, Martin and Lewis, and Dean kept a recording career going and a few live appearances.
Oh, could Dean sing, could he?
Ooh, could he what? Now, Jerry also came across his own theme song in 1956, Rockabye Your Baby with a Dixie Melody. This happened when he was filling in for Judy Garland. She had a performance at Las Vegas. She had to bail out at short notice, so Jerry stepped in to fill her shoes. Now, his performance of Rockabye Your Baby using Judy Garland's arrangement went over so well with the audience that Jerry has used it ever since as his theme song.
Now, I've heard Jerry sing on a couple of telethons. Why?
I think when he was younger, he was better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. His more recent stuff, his voice is gone.
Actually, it's an interesting thing. He came out to Australia and he did some performances in Australia, which were absolutely enormous hits, absolutely packed out. But people were a bit critical of him and they were saying, oh, geez, poor old Jerry, he's gotten so fat and he's put on weight and everything like that. Now, little known facts. Now, Jerry has battled with prostate cancer, diabetes and pulmonary fibrosis.
Yeah.
Don't know what that is. Well, the medical treatments for the pulmonary fibrosis caused him to gain weight and bloated his appearance. Now, it wasn't Jerry getting fat and old and lazy and stuffing cheeseburgers down his face like people claimed. It was a result of the treatments that he was undergoing to help him with his illnesses. So Everyone that thought bad of Jerry, shame, shame, shame.
And I think it's also a common trait for a lot of people to take down the tall poppies.
Well, yeah, that's it, you know. Oh, look at him, he's getting old, he's getting fat. No, oh, the poor guy was sick.
He made movies back in 1956. How can we be funny today? It's like, come on, guys. He is a legend.
He's a legend, and he's still going strong.
Oh.
Now, for 10 years, Martin and Lewis sandwiched 16 money-making films between their nightclub engagements, personal appearances, recording sessions, radio shows, and television bookings. Now, their last film together, Hollywood or Bust, 1956... You all know that one. On July the 25th of that year, the two made their last nightclub appearances together at the Coco Cabana, which was exactly 10 years to the day since they became a team. So we all know Martin and Lewis, bang, classic comedy duo. It was a 10-year time frame.
And, I mean, 15 movies in 10 years, plus all the TV shows, plus the radio, they were busy boys.
Let's see Bruce Willis do that.
So Jerry continued making personal appearances and made his first film alone, The Delicate Delinquent. Now, this is difficult for him at the time because it was written for Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis before the breakup. Now, the part originally meant for Dean Martin was given to Darren McGovern. Now, the interesting thing is the films changed over the years as a partnership. They changed. All the roles that Dean had became less and less likable, particularly in, say, Partners or Artists and Models. He was a very unlikable character.
Hmm.
And there's another one there with a circus, Three Ring Circus, I think it was, where Dean was an absolute, horrible character. And they seem to roll this out as contrast between the two. And I can understand what Dean got upset about, you know, doing this sort of thing because, you know, it was awful.
He was basically a nice guy, and they were turning him into a bad guy.
Yeah, and every role he had came up as a bad sort of person.
Hmm.
To contrast Jerry's sweet innocence and youthful
exuberance.
Juvenile sort of appearance, yeah.
Hmm. Interesting note, Darren McGavin, now he went on to do Carl Kolchak in Night Stalker.
That's the one, yep.
Yeah, so there you go.
Hmm.
Bit of a contrast. Jerry Lewis, Night Stalker. Mm.
So, following the team's split up, the two became involved in a very well-publicised, long-running feud. The next time they were seen in public together was by a national audience would be a surprise appearance on Jerry's telethon in 1976. This was arranged by Frank Sinatra. Now, there's a YouTube clip to get.
Mm.
Frank Sinatra comes out onto the telethon and says, look, I've got someone here who wants to say hello. And Jerry's like, okay. And on walks Dean Martin. And Jerry wrote in a book sometime later, was it Dean and Me, A Love Story was the name of the book. And he wrote that he was just so amazed that Dean Martin would have the courage to go up on national television and possibly get rejected or rebuffed, that he was just amazed that Dean would do that.
The man's got some cojones. Now, after the split of Martin and Lewis, Jerry was constantly on the move. His film career skyrocketed and he recorded several records. Now, remember those big black things with the hole in the middle? One of them was Rockabye My Baby with a Dixie Melody. Now, that was released by Decca Records and sold nearly 4 million copies. See if you can find one of those in an antique store somewhere.
Yeah, not wrong. Okay, well, while he was filming The Delicate Delinquent in 1957, Jerry worked with director Frank Tashlin, whose background as a cartoonist suited Jerry's brand of humour. By himself, Jerry Lewis became a major box office draw over the next several years. He wrote more than 5 films directed by Frank Tashlin. Let's see, they were Rockabye Baby, The Geisha Boy, Cinderfella, It's Only Money, Who's Minding the Store, and Disorderly Orderly. Then he went into producing and directing himself. He co-wrote with Bill Richmond and starred in the movie The Bellboy in 1960.
That's a classic one, The Bellboy.
Ah, it was brilliant. Now, using a hotel in Miami as his setting and a very small budget, the very tight shooting schedule and writing the script at night. So he became very busy because he shot the film during the day and performed in the hotel in the evenings. Now, it was during the filming of The Bellboy that Jerry Lewis made the major contribution to making of movies and television. During production, Jerry developed the technique of using video cameras and multiple closed-circuit monitors to allow him to view scenes at the same time as he was filming them. So he'd have monitors around the place so he could see what it looks like, because the video cameras were next to the film camera. So while he's
right, he was basically watching his own performance.
Yeah, like in a TV studio, you can have monitors around the place so you can see what's happening. Now, he later added videotape when the cost of that became affordable and
changed the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. It's become industry standard now.
Hmm.
It's also known as video assist nowadays, but it was Jerry Lewis who put it all together.
of course, that's all been replaced by digital technology today, and basically they can do whatever they like. But yeah,
times move on, but he had close to 50 years of this technology being used.
Yeah. Now, he also directed several more films, which he co-wrote with Richmond, including The Ladies' Man, The Errand Boy, and, of course, the most famous one of all, The Nutty Professor. Who could forget that?
Which has been redone with Eddie Murphy, and Jerry was involved in that too.
Yeah, I'm more of a fan of the Jerry Lewis version, though. I mean, Eddie Murphy's good, but there's just something about Jerry when he's on film.
Yeah, not wrong.
And he doesn't rely on so much special effects or prosthetics or all the rest of the stuff that goes along with modern movie making. It was just Jerry.
Yeah, and go back and have a look at the original Nutty Professor. It stands up today as a really fascinating film. Great acting, well-produced, well-directed. He really did well. Now, let's see, in 1959, a contract between Paramount Pictures and Jerry Lewis Productions was signed, specifying a payment of $10 million plus 60% of the profits for 14 films over 7 years. Now, this is the biggest single transaction in film history for the exclusive services of one performer.
Now, that's back in 1959. That's
59. Wow. Yeah. So, great stuff.
And great for Paramount, too, because they had the exclusive rights to someone like Jerry Lewis for 7 years.
Yeah. And, I mean, he was box office gold.
Yeah. But in 1965, Jerry then moved on to Columbia Pictures, where he produced and directed and starred in Three on a Couch. Then he wrote, produced, and directed and starred in The Big Mouth and Don't Raise the Bridge, Lower the River. In his next project, after Don't Raise the Bridge, Lower the River, he was to direct Peter Lawford and Sammy Davis Jr. That one was One More Time, a sequel to Salt and Pepper.
That was before United Artists. Then he moved over to Warner Brothers to star and produce and direct Which Way to the Front. So he's working his way through all the studios.
Yeah. And Which Way to the Front, was that where he was in the Foreign Legion? Or I think there was one. Or am I getting him confused with Abbott and Costello?
I think Abbott and Costello were in the Foreign Legion. Which Way to the Front, I don't think was based in the Foreign Legion, but it was military. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you would think, yeah. It's not like trying to put a shirt on, Which Way is the Front, you know.
Now, in 1967, Jerry became a professor at the University of Southern California, where he taught graduate students a course in film direction. The Total Filmmaker, based on recordings of 480 hours of his classroom lectures, was edited by Jerry and produced by Random House in 1971.
Can you imagine, you walk into class, brand new, you're a young filmmaker, you walk into your first class, you sit down, who's the lecturer today? It's Jerry Lewis.
And
then in walks Jerry, you know.
And some of those people going, were the likes of Martin Scorsese.
Mm-hmm.
And
George Lucas?
Yeah, George Lucas was there. He was one of the students.
I can imagine you would have been sitting there, you would have been looking at the class notes and going, you know, Professor Lewis, and you're not thinking, oh, yeah, Professor Jerry Lewis, as in the Jerry Lewis. You might have been thinking, oh, look, he's got the same name as Jerry Lewis. And then there you go.
Oh.
Knock your socks off, which you'd then donate to charity.
Now, something that's not widely known in the United States is that Jerry has won the Best Director of the Year award 8 times in Europe.
Wow.
Since 1960, 3 in France and 1 each for Italy, Belgium, Germany, Spain and the Netherlands. When Hardly Working opened in Paris, the marquee on the Champs-Élysées simply
Champs-Élysées.
That's the one. Yeah. All it said was Jerry. No further explanation was necessary for Jerry's French fans. The French director Jean-Luc Godard said, Jerry Lewis is the only American director who has made progressive films. He is much better than Chaplin or Keaton.
Wow.
Now, over the years, Jerry scored triumphs in stage appearances in Europe, where he's been hailed as one of the greatest comedians of the 20th century. He played at the Olympia Theatre in Paris in the 1970s. Tickets were sold out immediately. One of the critics said, Jerry Lewis is more than a great artist, he is a great man. Now, this has started the belief in America, oh, he's considered a genius in France, which I think is so cruel by the Western world. The French were looking at directors and hailing them as creative people long before the Americans. And the Americans will only recognize people who have done very dramatic or very powerful work, like Cecil B. DeMille or Alfred Hitchcock. They look at a comedian.
They weren't really focusing on art house films or anything.
And they look at a comedian and discount them and say, well, he's just a little clown. We, you know, he makes funny little films. They're not really important. Whereas the French see humor and say, well, there's a lot of skill in that, and hold him up and give him the praise that he really does deserve. Whereas the Americans tend to, oh, he's just a laugh maker. And this annoys me about Americans. When's the last time a comedy or a comic performer won an Academy Award?
Good question.
When's a comedy been put up there for best film? I'll look into
Silence.
That.
Yeah, yes. Look into that one. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And they always have sections in the Academy Awards for like the foreign language films or the art house films or whatever, and they'll never win best film. On a whole, they'll win their category as best foreign language film, but not as best film, whereas other places will look at all films as opposed to just those produced in America.
Exactly.
Yeah. But we'll get off our high horse here.
Yeah, move on. Where are we? 1972.
Oh, yeah, 1972. What a year that was.
Now, this is an interesting year for him because he starred and directed in the film The Day the Clown Cried. Now, this was never released.
Ah.
It's a tragic comedy, which is an interesting pairing of words, set in a Nazi concentration camp. Jerry has explained why the film hasn't been released by suggesting litigation over post-production financial difficulties, and has been seen by very few select individuals. But those who have seen it either praise it as absolute genius or they despise it.
I dare say the despising side of it would come from the subject matter and making light of something so serious. So
I'd love to see it. I'd see what he does because it's a tragic comedy set in a concentration camp. Yes, you've got a clown in this circumstance trying to keep the morale up of the people around him. That could be rather uplifting. But it's not been released. I have a nasty feeling we won't see it until after Jerry Lewis's death.
Which hopefully will be a long way from now.
Mm.
Now, 1972 was an interesting year because that also started an eight-year hiatus from movies for Jerry, where he didn't make any films for the rest of the 70s. And it wasn't until the early 80s that he actually returned to movie making with Hardly Working, which is probably an aptly named title of a movie.
Yeah.
Jerry both directed and starred in this very, very funny film about an unemployed circus clown trying to find employment in the real world. Now, Mike, you can identify with that.
Absolutely. And his wonderful thing, he went and became a sushi chef and done the whole throwing of the knives and catching of the rice and Jerry Lewis style. It was out of control. It was a very funny scene. I love that film.
Now, he then went on after that one and did Martin Scorsese's film The King of Comedy. Jerry there in that movie plays a late-night TV host plagued by an obsessive fan.
Played by Robert De Niro.
Ironically, the role had been offered to and turned down by Dean Martin. Interesting footnote there.
That would have been interesting. Very different. Very different.
Yeah. Jerry is brilliant in The King of Comedy. It's one to watch for sure.
Absolutely. Now, he also made appearances around that time in Saturday Night Live, did a wonderful dramatic turn in several episodes of the TV series Wise Guy, and appeared in Mad About You.
Oh, we didn't mention he also did a cameo in Batman.
Oh, yes, he did, back in the 60s, yeah.
Back in the 60s, Batman and Robin climbing up the side of the building, and all of a sudden Jerry Lewis pops his head out. Honestly, that would make me let go of the rope, I think.
1977 marked the year of Jerry's highest honour to be bestowed on him as an entertainer. It was the Congressman Les Aspin of Wisconsin nominated Jerry for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Wow.
Now,
That was because of his work with the muscular dystrophy charities.
Yeah, the muscular dystrophy. You know. So the senator's nomination included Jerry Lewis is a man of for all seasons, all people, all times. His name has, in the hearts of millions, become synonymous with peace, love, and brotherhood.
Beautiful words.
Yeah. So in addition to the Nobel Peace Prize nomination, Jerry has received many other honours. In 1971, the AFL-CIO presented him with the Murray Green Award for Community Services, the highest honour the Labor organisation can bestow upon an American citizen. In 1976, the United States Senate unanimously I think my tongue just came off the rollers.
Hey, put your teeth back in, Mike.
They unanimously adopted a resolution of appreciation for him for his outstanding contribution in the fight against muscular dystrophy. In 1978, the communications industry honoured him with the National Association of Television Primetime Executives Award for the year for his humanitarian efforts in raising funds to combat neuromuscular diseases through his annual Labor Day telethon.
Neuromuscular, that's such a big word.
Oh, yes, yeah. There's a reason Latin's a dead language.
Now, in 1978, Jerry received the Jefferson Award for the greatest public service benefiting the disadvantaged. This is a very special ceremony that was held at the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. Now, this is a guy that started out in burlesque comedy houses and everything. Now, here he is in Washington being hit with the highest award possible for working for charities. I mean, the guy's got a huge heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've said it before, I'll say it again.
Between films, he found himself time to put pen to paper to produce his biography, Jerry Lewis in Person, a revealing portrait of the on and off screen man, written in conjunction with a guy called Herb Gluck.
Now, of course, Herb Gluck's name wasn't on the cover because, well, who would put Gluck on a cover? Sorry, Herb.
In 1991, Jerry was surprised by the National Academy of Cable Programming when MC Whoopi Goldberg presented him with the Comic Life Achievement Award.
But he's not dead!
The telecast was seen around the world. In April 1991, Jerry was inducted into the Broadcast Hall of Fame by the National Association of Broadcasters at their convention in Las Vegas.
In 1994, Jerry travelled to Blackpool in England to make Funny Bones for Hollywood Pictures. Here he is, another production house. The guy's moving on.
Yeah.
The film also co-starred Oliver Platt and Leslie Caron. Is that
Caron.
How you say?
Caron.
Caron.
That was
sorry,
a great film. Actually, I've got a mate in Adelaide who raved about this film. I hunted high and low to find it. When I finally found it, it's brilliant. Get the film. It is a wonderful, wonderful film. Now, a dream Jerry always had was to play on Broadway. In the 1950s, Martin and Lewis did 9 shows a day at the Paramount Theatre on Broadway. Can you imagine that? 9 shows a day.
Oh, I get tired doing 3.
Yeah. Now, between shows, they performed and threw millions of photographs a week out the windows to the fans that are packed in the street. I've seen film of that. That is scary.
Over 70,000 people packed outside the theatre waiting for them, and they're tossing photos out the window.
Mm.
I don't know what they were photos of, but yeah, they're throwing them out the window.
Of themselves. It was amazing. Uh-huh. So even though they had this marvellous success back in the 50s, this was not Broadway as far as Jerry was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So he put that to rights in 1995. When he went to the Marquee Theatre in Broadway and performed in Damned Yankees. He did 185 performances, and this was the fulfillment of his lifelong dream. In 1995, he took Damned Yankees on an international tour. During its second year, the tour broke all attendance records of any previous travelling Broadway production.
Well, Jerry Lewis is in it, so people have got to go and see it.
Oh, and, you know, rightly so. It's not just a big name up on stage. He was a hell of a performer.
Yeah.
He can get up there and do it all.
Now, in 1998, he received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the American Comedy Awards. I'm sorry, but giving someone a Lifetime Achievement Award before they've passed is... He's still got more life to go, people.
Yeah, but, you know, so sad doing it posthumously.
Yeah, well, true, yeah. Mm. But he then later made 2 live performance tours of Australia. Yay! And he was, the fans just absolutely loved him. He was brilliant on stage. And he really is a performer. I mean, you get people that will come on stage today, they'll sing a song, they'll do an act or whatever, and basically that's all they're doing. But Jerry comes on stage and he performs.
Yes.
He's not a young man, but he really gets the audience involved. You feel like he's on stage for you when he's up there. He's just absolutely brilliant.
And I'm very upset that the twice he's performed in Melbourne, and both cases I haven't been able to go and see it.
Well, he sells out so quickly. It's just one of those.
He sells out, and I had other things to do at the time, and I couldn't get it into the thing. But hopefully he comes back soon, and I can get myself a seat.
Let's hope.
In 1999, Jerry dedicated much of his time to the remakes of the 1960 classic movies Bellboy, Cinderfella, The Errand Boy, and The Nutty Professor 2.
Now, that was the remake.
The remake, yeah.
With what's-his-face.
Yeah, we mentioned before.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember his name now.
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
Oh, dear, he's going to write us letters for that one, isn't he?
In 2009, he was awarded the Gene Herschelt Humanitarian Award at the Academy Awards ceremony. He's never received an Academy Award, but the Humanitarian Award would be pretty damn nice on the shelf anyway.
It would be, yeah. Now, he's received a lot of awards through his life. He's had a Lifetime Achievement Award from the American Comedy Awards, the Golden Camera, which is a directing award, I think.
Yep, from the Film Critics Association, yep.
Yep. The Venice Film Festival have also awarded him. He's had 2 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. 2 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But he's never won an Oscar. Why? But there is a campaign underway to award him with an honorary Lifetime Achievement Award at the Academy Awards. So let's hope that actually gets underway.
Yeah, the Gene Herschelt Humanitarian Award's pretty good, but a Lifetime Achievement would be good recognition of this incredible performer.
Yeah.
Now, he suffered years of back pain due to a fall he had during the film of The Caddy. In fact, you can see it on film. He used to jump into the back of a ute as it drives away, or a pickup truck, and the truck drives away before he gets on it. So he sort of takes a flying leap and lands on his back. And that is what gave him back trouble for years. You can actually see it on film. An electronic device developed by Meditronic, recently implanted into his back, has helped reduce the discomfort. He's now Meditronic's leading spokesman for this great technology.
Now, Dick Sargent, I think. Was it Dick Sargent or Dick York? He also had bad problems with his back.
Yep, Dick York did it when he was filming also. He had to pick up something heavy. I think he was playing a railway construction worker. And he picked something up and twisted the wrong way and had a lifetime of very severe back pain.
But great comedians, great performers, but suffering with their own private pain. I think there's something in that for all of us.
All fans of The Simpsons would know that Hank Azaria based the voice of Professor Flick on Jerry Lewis's Jerry Lewis's Nutty Professor character, Julius Kelp. Now, Jerry was eventually invited to guest as Frink's father.
Oh, I remember that episode. That was cool. Because I was sitting there and I was listening, and Professor Frink was going on, and his father was there, and I'm listening to the voice, and I'm going, that sounds like Jerry Lewis. And it wasn't until the credits came up at the end, I went, oh, it was Jerry. Oh, there you go.
And don't you hate it when Channel 10 reduced the credits down to microscopic size and you can't see who was performing? Oh, I hate that. Anyway, moving on.
Hang on. There's one negative we must mention about Jerry Lewis, and I'm sorry, Jerry, if you're out there listening, but Brisbane Lions, come on.
Yes,
Jerry Lewis is a supporter of the Brisbane Lions Football Club. Ugh.
So, yeah, well, moving on.
Put me off him now.
In 1983, he was nominated for a Golden Raspberry as the worst actor in his role in Slapstick of Another Kind. Yes, they can't all be gems, and this movie certainly wasn't.
I get the feeling that Jerry would have taken the Golden Raspberry as some sort of badge of honour, and he probably would have made a comic routine out of it.
There's only been 2 or 3 people who have actually accepted the Golden Raspberries, and Jerry wasn't one of them. So you really got to consider that Jerry started in films around the time the Marx Brothers era was coming to an end. He was making films at the same time as Abbott and Costello, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Frank Sinatra. And they're all gone. So Jerry is basically the last of the era.
And he's still going.
Yeah. And it is great stuff. I mean, I hope this show really encourages people to go look for some of the old Jerry Lewis films, because, you know, most of them are great. Don't get the slapstick of another kind. That was a really bad movie. But there are lots of Jerry Lewis films out there that are brilliant. And definitely go see The Nutting Professor again.
Oh, for sure. And you see the rubber-faced comedians of today performing, and look back at Jerry, one of the original rubber-faced comedians. I mean, yeah, okay, Harpo did it as well, but you've got to see Jerry in action. When he was in his prime, the Martin and Lewis films, just brilliant stuff.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. So Jerry Lewis still with us, thank God. I'm really hoping he manages to come out to Australia for another performance or two. And
it would be good.
It'd be great to sit down and watch a legend in action.
Jerry is one of the most recognisable people on earth, and a new generation of fans discover him every day, and it's something to see. So if you're part of that new generation, get out there, find some Jerry Lewis movies, watch them. You will not regret it.
Absolutely. Well, that's the show.
That's another one.
We'll be
it's
back.
A wrap, as they say.
We'll be back soon. I have no idea when, and I have no idea who.
Aha. Oh, it could be a surprise.
But we do have a couple of things in the pipework, and it could be good. Some very big news coming for Historical Hystericals in the near future.
Live podcasts with real people.
Don't give away too much. We got to go.
Sit quiet. Good boy.
If you like the show, drop us a line or review us on iTunes. Spread the word. We got to go.
Yep, time to go. Bye, everybody.
Have fun.
Bye.